Coming to you from the frozen tundra deep inside the basement of champions.
Canada!
The Dean Somerset Podcast. And now, the man who puts the FU in functional training. Here he is, Dean Somerset. Hey there, boys and girls. Welcome to the Dean Somerset Podcast. I'm your beautiful host, Dean Somerset. And with me today, we have the absolutely handsome bearded man, Saul Orwell. Saul, say hi to the friendly people for me.
Hey, man. Glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you. It's been a little tricky getting you on the podcast. I mean, we've had a couple of start stops kind of in the past few months. There was a time in Calgary where we were ready to go, but other things conspired. And
For the record, I'm going to totally interrupt you there. You left. I was ready to do it. I was excited to do it.
Yeah.
And I felt like that prodigal kid who like leaves with like a rose to give to his date, except his date is already skedaddled somewhere else. That's what happened. So I just want the audience to be very clear that I was there and you left me at the altar, basically.
To be fair, I was there as well, early, considerably early, ready to go. And before my talk, we were going to record, but you know, stuff just happens. Life gets in the way. The wife wanted to go home, so we're good to go now. We're making up for it. Everything is life and everything is good. So I wanted to have you on here to talk about cookies.
Absolutely, man. I love cookies.
I figured that much. I mean, I figured there's only one person in the world who has me matched as far as love of cookies go, and that would be Saul Orwell.
I'm glad to have... You know what? There is actually one other guy, but when we get into the cookies deep, I'll mention him. He may actually have me beat, but you know, we'll see what happens.
Really? Somebody out there has Saul Orwell tapped out when it comes to cookie love. That's something. There's actually a store close to where my gym is that's called Cookie Love, and I go there on a regular basis. I think you'd get a kick out of it. So what is it about cookies that you love so much?
What is it about cookies? Ooh, we're getting right into it. To be honest, I mean, my mom taught me how to make me chocolate chip cookies when I was, I think, 9 years old. It was like the first thing I learned to make. Beyond that, I mean, cookies like a sandwich, right? It's this perfect little base and you can extend it however you want. And the other nice thing about a cookie is you can have one that's small enough that it's not like this caloric bomb. So you can be like, hey, listen, I want a taste. In general, you can't do that with most desserts. Maybe with like a bar of chocolate, right? You can have break off a little piece of chocolate. But everything else that's in the dessert category, it's all or nothing as far as I'm concerned. So I think part of the appeal of cookies is it's easier to control the quantity to help control the calories.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I also like the fact that they're one of the few desserts that are not requiring utensils.
That's right. I mean, to be honest, really, you can make anything not require utensil, but sure. Let's just say clearly you don't really need, or you like, utensils are a waste of time when it comes to cookies.
Yeah, I mean, I've been known to hand bomb pieces of pie before, so that's always a fun time. But
hells yeah, man. That's why you throw them in the fridge, because then they coagulate a little bit and it's easier to hold. Absolutely, man. I'm all about using hands when you eat, especially when it comes to dessert. It's just so much more satisfying.
I mean, hands and a trough, that's really all you need when it comes to eating to begin with. I mean, just stand over the trough, use your hands. If you have a plate or even just a bag of some sort, just bag and face and hands.
Very much. I feel like maybe a bib just to keep your shirt clean. But other than that, I think, yeah, I'm in agreement with you
right
there.
Just go shirtless. That's all. Just that way you don't have to worry about the shirt getting...
That is one way to do it. That's right. Take a shower right afterwards. Why not?
Exactly. So you started something up called Cookie Life, which I think is absolutely genius. What was Cookie Life and how did that start up?
So here's the thing. Yeah, a lot of people think it's this genius thing, but my entire MO is to be a shit disturber, right? My entire thing is what kind of shenanigans can we get into? So I actually found this amazing cookie joint in Toronto like 5-6 years ago when I moved back. And in that time, I have maybe met over 300 entrepreneurs there.
Wow.
And so about 18 months ago, I was talking to a friend of mine. I was telling her how amazing this cookie place was, and she's like, no way, you're lying. Okay, maybe a little bit more than 18 months. Sorry, this is like December 2015. And she didn't believe me, and we went to have cookies there, and she had one bite, and she's like, you know what, you're right, best cookies I've ever had. And I was like, woman, that was never in doubt. Like, we knew this. So a week later, she posts on my Facebook wall, and she says, you know what, I found better cookies. And I'm like, you're obviously an idiot. And, you know, we're just bantering back and forth. And other people are chiming in. And then in comes her friend, Renee. So I've never met Renee. I have no idea who Renee is. And Renee is like, I can make better cookies than both of those places. And I'm like, okay,
shots fired right there.
Exactly. Right. I was like, okay, there's one idiot. Now there's two idiots. Like, there's an infestation going on. This is a cause for concern. So we're bantering back and forth. And eventually I'm like, okay, the only way we can clear this properly is if we have a blind taste test. And they both readily agree. And then I say, okay, Renee, you invited yourself to my wall, so I'm going to invite myself to your house. You shall host said blind taste test. So Renee's a good sport, and she's like, sure, why not? And so in like January, like the middle of January last year, we had the inaugural Chalk Chip Cookie Off. And we ended up with 18 different kinds of cookies because other people started chiming in saying they wanted to be a part of it. And what's awesome is after I posted this photo on Facebook, people started commenting saying they can make better cookies. And normally that's where the story dies, right? It's like, haha, whatever, one day. But being what I am, I said, all right, prove it to me. Send me your cookies. And so about, I think, 6 weeks later, there was a lady in London, Ontario, which is like a 2.5 hour drive from Toronto. And I had a friend coming from London here. And my friend actually went over to this other lady's place. She had no idea who this person was. The other person had no idea who my friend was. Literally showed up at her door and was like, hey, I'm Saul's friend. I'm here to pick up cookies. She gave her a box of cookies. Those cookies came to me in Toronto. And they're pretty good. And I posted them online and I said, look, you know, this is the cookie life. Where's everyone else's cookies? And that was literally just the start. And so since then, in the last 18, 20 months, I have received over 150 different, mostly primarily cookies. I've received pie in the mail. I've received some other bizarre things too. But it just kind of blew up on its own. And so a lot of people, they come to me and they're like, oh, that was brilliant, you know, personal branding or strategy. And I was like, it was never... And as you hear me tell the story, it was never something that was planned. It was just more, let's embrace spontaneity and see where it goes. And so I'm actually starting to I've been thinking about it for a while. I'm almost ready. I'm going to shut down the cookie life per se. It was always something that was just fun as a lark. Let's do this. But the way my personality is, like, let's try something new and then let's move on. And some people, you know, they think it's a great thing and I should double down and buy cookielife.com or whatever and make shirts and blah, blah, blah. But it served its purpose, which was always like, food is fun. Let's get together over food. Let's have fun. And that's it. Like, let's use social media for something beyond. Let's get more famous or let's make more money. Mm-hmm. Let's do something silly with it. And I think I was able to make my little way of happening it there, making it happen there.
There you go. I mean, something that started almost entirely organically turned into something that got you a lot of attention in a very positive manner. So how many different publications started writing about you and Cookie Life?
I think I've been in like half a dozen, because the other nice thing about the Cookie Life is it has inherently many, many stories in it. Even when I give my talks at various events, there's so many stories, right? There's a story of, or the lesson of, go for the ask, right? I went for the ask. There's a lesson of embrace the spontaneity, embrace the ridiculousness. Mm-hmm. There's a lesson of, you know, enjoy life. There's a lesson of food brings people together. And kind of to segue into it, so earlier this year when we did our next version of the Chalk Chip Cookie Off, it was the first, like, people kept emailing me or messaging me saying, hey, I want an invite, I want an invite. And I said, okay, let's make this into an event. And if I'm making this into an event, let's make this into a charity event. Mm-hmm. And so we were able to raise $2,500 earlier this year. I did a sausage showdown 2 months ago. We raised $10,000 for charity. I'm thinking about doing one in November in New York. And this time I want to hit at least $20,000 for charity. So the lesson again is, like, you leverage your assets. And in this case, my asset was I bring people together over food. I know a lot of entrepreneurs. Let's do this. So it just became this, there's so many things you can get out of it. Instead of just, hey, look at me, I'm getting cookies, look how cool I am. It was more about, look at all the underlying truths that come out of it when you kind of step back and look at it in an abstract manner.
So what do you think led this to being such a thing? Like, obviously it was, you mentioned the big lessons of, you know, embrace food, embrace family, embrace culture, embrace community, all that kind of stuff. But why do you think this, of all things, getting people to click with cookies, was what kind of set things over the edge? I mean, you could have done this with any other type of food. You could have done it with anything like deadlifts or whatever, but...
Sure.
Yeah. So why do you think that cookies, of all things, was kind of a tipping point where people are like, I'm going to send this guy who I only know on social media cookies in the mail and get him to judge my worth?
So I think there's two sides to it. One of it is I don't take social media seriously. A lot of people take it way too seriously. They're always talking about inspirational posts. Look how amazing I am. Look at my journey. One of my common complaints is people do like a version of full vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is Not to make it sound like an ass, or not to be dismissive, but let's say hypothetically I was bullied as a kid.
Yeah.
If I post on it on Facebook, it's vulnerable for me, but it's not vulnerable for anybody else. And the context I mean is, no one's going to say, you suck, right? If I posted, man, I got bullied and it was really hard and I've worked through it, no one's going to be like, haha, right? It's not Simpsons, right? So me, instead, I've taken an approach of like, I have an opinion. It's strongly held. It's a strong opinion, loosely held. Derek Sivers says that. And so I come up with these opinions and people fight back and I'll relent sometimes. Sometimes I won't. I think it's that I was more of a personable human being than some kind of all-knowing genius. And then the second part of cookies, man, is it's like universal. Right, you go to any country in the world, they've got their own version of cookie. It's easy to mail. Everyone thinks they've got the best version, or their mom makes the best version. It's not like, you know, you'll find all these Italians and they'll say their Nonna makes the best pasta or makes the best pizza, or you'll find, you know, someone else that says, oh no, my grandma makes this. Like, each culture has their own version of their food. Mm-hmm. But cookies are universal. Everyone loves cookies. And I think eventually it was just even part of being something ridiculous, right? Being part of something where people knew I wasn't trying to make money. I wasn't making this into an Instagram account. This wasn't some like big hashtag. It was always a joke, right? Mm-hmm. And I think people embrace the ridiculousness of that. Everyone's so serious, everyone's so angry, everyone's so tense online. It was fun to do something stupid. And like, one of my favorite examples is, I spoke at this event last year. I met this musician. And like 4 or 5 months ago, he, some friend of his tweeted, she lives in London, Ontario, somehow again. She tweeted some pictures of cookies, and I hadn't talked to him in months. He immediately tweeted back to me like, you need to send Saul cookies. And within 48 hours, I had cookies from her. It's that, right? It was just so inane and so ridiculous that people embraced it. And I think we need more of that. We need a little bit more levity. You know this, right? When you did your presentation, you do your magic tricks. I got so excited. That, right? Like, we don't need to. If you have an audience, you don't need to appear or pretend or act as if you're this genius person, or even like that faux humility, like, oh, I don't know everything, but then everything is about how you know everything. It's that, right? Embracing just being a dumbass human. I think that was a key one. Yeah.
Just so you know, I've only ever done that magic trick once. And I haven't done it again. So you were the only person, you were the only group of people to see that magic trick. So,
well, I feel truly special. So thank you for that. Thank you.
Obviously, like, Cookie Life has been huge as far as bringing people together. Like you said, you got people that are just tweeting out, hey, this person needs to send Saul cookies. So networking became a huge aspect of what was going on with Cookie Life. And obviously, if you're doing stuff for charity development, that's massively beneficial to everyone around you. You write a lot on network development as well. So How does something like this tie into creating a network of people around you, at least people that, for one, could be good business, but then are also just quality people?
Yeah, so my emphasis is definitely more on quality people. Examine.com is kind of built as a Switzerland. We're in our own bubble, especially in the world of entrepreneurship. We don't do any services, so there's nothing to be gained. Mm-hmm. I think the appeal, again, is that people want to be associated with fun things, for random things, for cool things. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't say the Cookie Life per se is cool, but it was interesting. It was unique. About once a week, someone will post a picture of that. Le Gourmand is the name of the place with the amazing choc chip cookies. They will post a picture of it and they'll tag me. And I've actually gone through their Twitter tags. I get tagged more for that cafe and their cookies than they actually do with their own handle.
You are, and like, so their brand ambassador. So hopefully they at least give you a free cookie a week for all the publicity you send.
I'm working on convincing the owner. So for my birthday, one of the things I do is my lady makes me 6 different desserts for my birthday. That's just our tradition. And so what she did was she actually convinced the owner, Milton, to make a giant cast iron version. I think it was 10 inches. Wow. And so it was amazing. So I'm currently trying to convince him to sell that as the El Sol. And like, he could price it some ridiculous number, like $200, and no one will ever buy it. Yeah. But at least I can say there's the El Sol at Le Gourmand.
Yeah.
Which will just make me feel so much better. But going back to the networking aspect, I think, first of all, you know, I get more and more, it's been very interesting. I'm getting more and more people requesting to hang out with me and whatnot. And there's the typical, you know, I want to pick your brain. Hey, let's go grab a coffee. And I don't want to sound like a dick, but what's the benefit to me? right? Like, what's the positive side on me taking an hour, hour and a half to chat with somebody that I don't really know? Where's the benefit? And so one of the things that was fun was when I started getting going, my shtick was, hey, I will bribe you with the best chocolate chip cookies. So I was one upfront that I realized, like, it's an inequitable exchange of time, right? I'm gleaning more in a way. And two, I made it more fun. I was like, listen, like, forget the coffee, forget the boring words that people use. Cookies, that's fun. That's different. That's unique. And I've actually known quite a few people who've adopted this. And one of the more interesting ones is ice cream. If you can find a really good gelato place or a really good ice cream place and your bribe is that, or really good chocolate, everyone loves ice cream. Everyone loves chocolate. And if they don't like ice cream, they're lactose intolerant. There's always sorbet or whatnot. That's been a big hit. And so from that, I think stemming from the fact that I actually enjoy cookies, that I can have a deep discussion about actually what makes a really good chocolate chip cookie. We can even get into the science of it if you want. I think that enthusiasm is on display. And so people know I'm not just this weird guy who's trying to be really smart and making a personal brand because cookies are cool or some garbage like that. They're like, okay, this dude legitimately loves cookies. He actually goes out and eats them and rates them and blah, blah, blah. And I think it's that aspect that helps the networking angle. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I mean, if you're truly passionate about what you're doing and that angle is something that you drive forward, it shines through. It's not something you feel like you have to force.
Yeah, it's a level of uniqueness, right? So I actually spent a couple of hours earlier today writing up an outline of a series of articles I want to do on networking. And a lot of it, honestly, and I just had one article come out in the Globe and Mail last week. And my viewpoint on networking is I'm here to make friends, not expand my network. And the reality is for every 10 people I come across, there's maybe 3 people I actually want to hang out with.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there are 3 people I'd actually want to sit down with and shoot the shit and say, hey, let's go grab cookies and whatnot. So I think it's also that, where people sometimes are so obsessed with, oh, this person knows this person, let me go hang out with him or let me try to befriend her, when really it should be like, oh, this person is interested in X topic that I'm really interested in. Right? Even right now, like on my Twitter account, people were tweeting at me about, like, I have a few friends that I met through networking, entrepreneurship, whatever, that are huge NBA fans. And they know I'm a huge NBA fan, right? So when we talk about NBA, we are talking about it because we are enjoying it, not because one of us thinks that the other person may be interested in the NBA. Let's curry favor or some kind of garbage like that. Curry. So I think that's
really what you did there.
That's right. That's true. So it's that kind of stuff, right? When you do it in an authentic way and you're more almost worried about making a friend than trying to impress somebody, it all kind of cascades from there. It's like a snowball, right? It just catches speed. And it just blows up in its own way.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the biggest thing that I could saliently say along the same lines you did is that most business is done with friends, not necessarily just with business contacts.
Oh, 100%.
So if you make really good friends with people, you're going to be able to do business with them in one way or another. But it's really hard to force business on people where it's just like, I really don't want to spend time with you, or where it's like one person's asking for everything and the other person has to give everything.
100%, right? Like, one of my truths I've found is that you want to work with someone you like. Mm-hmm. You'll almost go out of your way. There's so many stories you'll hear about someone saying like, hey, this person came, someone from, you know, influence or money or whatever, will be like, yeah, this person came to me and he or she didn't have any skills that I needed or we weren't really hiring, but I made a job for them. I wanted to work with them. That level of desire is, in my opinion, super, super powerful. It moves the needle. As an example, we are doing a course and we're actually doing a beta test. It starts tomorrow. And I posted on Facebook saying, hey, I need 5 people. And this is like a paid thing. This wasn't even like a free thing. I posted on Facebook. Within 3 minutes, I had 11 people who had messaged me and I had to delete the post. It's that kind of stuff, right? People liked me for all my irreverence, my cookie, whatever. And so when it came time to, hey, I need help, or, you know, here's some stuff that we're doing, they wanted to work with me. They wanted to work with a team because they liked us, not just because, you know, they're super nerds or anything like that.
Absolutely. They're probably also super nerds, but, you know,
one way or another. Yes. That's also true right there.
You got to make sure that you get the quality people, and the nerds are going to come to you for one way or another, right?
I could not agree with you more.
So when you're talking about, hey, I want to show you the best chocolate chip cookie on the face of the planet, are a lot of these things that you're doing as far as meet and greets with people face-to-face time? Like, how important is face-to-face versus going over the internet or going through Skype or something like that to you?
Yeah, I definitely way prefer face-to-face. I mean, I have a computer engineering degree, but I'm a very proud Luddite. And you can see this. Like, I don't use my phone – if I'm hanging out with somebody to write notes or someone says interesting, I always have a notebook with me. Mm-hmm. I like the physical world. Yeah. I like the physicality. Even then, like, if I'm talking to you right now, I could get distracted by my phone. I mean, it's off and all that. Like, I put on airplane mode, but I could be distracted by my phone. I could be distracted by, you know, some other message or something else like that. Mm-hmm. When I'm sitting with you face to face across from you, unless I'm an asshole and I've got my own phone out already, there's nothing distracting me. You are my only, object of attention, if you wish. So I much, much, much prefer face-to-face. With that said, sometimes when it's a pure business transaction, which happens, phone-to-phone is easier. You get on the phone, you converse, you're done. Before this podcast, I was on with an editor for a major health site. And I think our conversation lasted maybe 13 minutes. It was great, right? Because we both knew where we were coming from. It was a bit more transactional in nature. Yeah. I had been vouched by, or we had both been vouched by a mutual friend. So there was at least that network component to it. But we were both like, they were busy with an event they're about to throw. I was busy because, well, my throat hurts so much. Like, I'm like, I can't even do this. But it was one of those things. So I quickly told her about what we do. She quickly told about what they're looking for. And I said, we can do this, this, this. She said, okay, done. So I think it also depends if you have the transaction ready or if you have a specific object or, sorry, goal. Phone-to-phone works. Even Skype-to-Skype works. But if you actually want to establish contacts, establish relationships, then definitely face-to-face destroys everything else. It's not even worse.
Absolutely. I mean, there's so much that you can learn from somebody by seeing how they operate versus, you know, just seeing what they type. I mean, they're a completely 100%. Different person in real life versus online.
There's so many little nuances you'll pick up from with how people act, with words they say, phrases they use, how they move, how they interact, how they even carry themselves. I mean, I made a crack the other day. Not a crack. I said that I'm the sum of my interactions with everyone else. But I think that's a very legitimate truth, is that every time someone is charming or funny or interesting or cool, in my head, I'm kind of trying to like, okay, what made them that? Mm-hmm. And what components of that? Like, there's some things obviously I can't emulate, but what components of it are that I can use myself, right? What made me feel so warm and fuzzy towards someone, which I think is a very important thing to think about, even in terms of like self-awareness. Mm-hmm. If someone's being very into you or some, or the opposite, you want to be able to think and ponder over what was it that made it happen. So I think those interactions is face-to-face, when you get to really even see someone converse with the, you know, the barista and how they order coffee and how they interact and how someone like Derek Halpern, right? Social triggers. You'll notice if you ever hang out with him that he's always chatting up everybody around him. And part of the reason why I started doing that was because of him. I'm like, okay, there's no harm for me to chat up someone. Worst case, nothing different happens. Best case, I get better service. I get better treated. You know, I get whatever, whatever. There's all these little upsides, and I would have never picked it up if I hadn't actually hung out with him in person. Instead of just, you know, reading his stuff online or Skyping with him or whatnot. So definitely face-to-face the way to go.
Absolutely. And the best way that you can get any kind of benefit out of a service is to talk to the people who are the gatekeepers to the service. Asking somebody, hey, how's your day going? What's new in your world? That's the biggest way that you can get somebody to give you preferential treatment in one way or another. Even if it doesn't happen, it might. So somebody might bend over backwards to make your day because you made theirs. Just 100%. By asking about it.
Yeah, one thing I've noticed is just by being unique in your own way, it makes a huge impact on how people almost treat you or remember you. For example, I am a huge Seinfeld fan. I always throw in Seinfeld references. 99% of the time, people don't get it. But the one that I use the most is Giddy Up, which is something that Kramer uses all the time. Yeah. And I've noticed that just by saying Giddy Up, and I just picked it up as some weird little like phrase I picked up because I was watching it too much. I started saying Giddy Up. I noticed that people respond to Giddy Up. And it's not even that I was trying to do anything specifically strategic. It's not even that it's a networking thing or some kind of big benefit, but almost by being ever so slightly bizarrely unique by just saying giddy up. And I have one other friend who says giddy up and we fight over who owns the phrase giddy up. But that, right, it almost experiencing someone that's atypical is almost always generally a positive experience. And just being able to have that into someone else's life is, I think, a very powerful thing one can build towards.
Absolutely. You got to have your solid solisms in there once in a while, right? My clients tell me I've got my own list of catchphrases that I spout at them all day long, so I should probably put those into a book one day.
Hell yeah, man. Make them into a ridiculous hashtag. Yeah. That's the way to go.
Overheard at Dean's training sessions.
Yeah, that's right. Overheard at Starbucks, overheard at Sessions.
Exactly. I mean, the whole concept that you said about like cookie life being something just ridiculous and adding levity, that's why I started those overheard at Starbucks posts. If anyone hasn't seen it on Facebook, I've got that going on. But it's something where it's just standing in line at Starbucks, you hear conversations. Cool, this is funny. Put it online. It doesn't even have any kind of context to it, but it's just all about making people laugh and smile.
And people respond, right? You'll notice this on Facebook. People comment on that stuff. They love it. It's so different, and it sets you apart, right? You're not just this weird robot who talks about glenohumeral joint and hip extension and Cossack squats and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. You're this funny person that kind of observes the inanity around us in the world, which most people fail to do. So absolutely, that's well, I love it. Yeah,
absolutely. Devil's in the details, right? So let's talk about details of cookies. You said that you were going to get deep into the science of what makes a good cookie versus a bad cookie. So in your mind, what makes a good cookie? What's some of the key things that you have to make a good cookie on Saul's list?
All right. So the number one thing that most people fail with cookies, chocolate chip cookies, is that they underchip the cookie. Mm-hmm. Now, we're very clear. It's a chocolate chip cookie. It's not a cookie with a few smidgens of chips, right? It's meant to be well chipped. So there's number one fail. Number two fail is that people use garbage chocolate. And by garbage chocolate, I mean like Hershey chocolate chips. No, you need to up the game. You need to get something nice like Calibet chocolate or something like that, which has a really nice, distinct flavor. Now, if you want to even really amp it up, one great way to set it apart is to use a combination of chocolate chunks and chocolate chips. Mm. Or if you want to even go more intense, go mini chips, right? So what happens now is you don't know if your next bite is going to have these little chocolate chips or a giant chunk of chocolate or what's going on in there. Afterwards, I mean, I personally don't think you should have a cookie too big, though my favorite place obviously is a giant cookie. My favorite place, the cookie there is 650 calories. It's a monster, to say the least. I think they tested it was 49 grams of sugar. So it's quite the bomb right there.
Yeah. But you got to be doing your dips in order to get one of those kind of cookies, man. You got to be getting ready to get the pump on.
The most I've ever had, I do want to throw this out there, the most I've ever had in a row was 8. I had ACL surgery 3.5 months ago. I had shoulder labrum surgery 2 weeks ago, like when this happened. Mm-hmm. And so I was just sitting there, like just wallowing in self-pity, being like, oh, everything hurts. Oh, I can't walk. I can't lift I can't like lift my arm. And a friend of mine, she was going to Malaysia. She dropped off 11 of them and I just tanked 8. Yeah. I don't know how many calories there were at the time. I don't know if I can do 8 now. Maybe. I think, you know what, I think I could do. Anyway, then the other key component of a cookie is the exterior needs to be crispy. It needs to have a little, almost like a crunch or resistance to your bite. And then the inside needs to have a level of fudginess or softness. And so to wrap it up, what I learned that this cookie place that I love does so much, the geniusness, one of the things they unlocked, was they freeze their cookie dough. And they cut them into squares. And what's awesome when you bake a frozen cookie dough, or when it's frozen, is the outside crisps up really nice. It gets toasted really nice. You get like that dark brown, that beautiful color. Mm-hmm. But because it's frozen, the inside doesn't get cooked as much. So it remains very soft and fudgy. Not like doughy, because you don't want it like raw. But it retains this nice softness on the inside, but a really nice crispy exterior on the outside. So the entire experience is quite sublime. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's the best. Yes. There we go. That's the key components of a great chocolate chip cookie. And there is my secret tip to you to help ensure that you can make your own amazing chocolate chip cookie.
There you go. That's worth the price of admission right there. Now, I can say that I have had a Le Gourmand cookie, but it hasn't come from Saul, unfortunately. So one of these days I will be able to get a cookie from Saul, but I'm hoping to be able to. I'm going to be going to Toronto at the end of September, beginning of October, so you and I can go on a cookie tour or something like that. And
we will definitely go have some delicious, there's amazing chocolate, like a 5-minute walk away from the cookie place. Mm-hmm. They won 2 years ago, they won the international competition for best dark chocolate in the world. Nice. So we'll definitely have cookies and chocolate on our agenda. Done.
Sounds good. It'll be my treat. But they are definitely massive cookies, really thick, and I thought they were just delicious all around. And a box of like 5 of them appeared, and I tried to give them away to everyone. I wound up eating like 3 or 4 of them in one shot. So they can definitely go down really quick and easy if you're in that kind of mood. And I'm guessing if you've had multiple surgeries, you got one good arm, one good leg, and a pocket full of dreams, you're going to throw some cookies on top of the pain.
You know, I mean, really my viewpoint on it was, because it was on, like, my table, it was like maybe 15 steps, hops away.
Yeah.
The amount of effort it took me to get there, I was like, I'm not going back. So I essentially just kind of stood there and powered them down.
You made it worth your while.
I had two in each hand, so I had four total, and I kind of like on my crutches and my sling kind of like got back to my sofa.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, now there's four in my hands, I got to eat it. It'd be illegal not to eat them once I've carried them back. So that's kind of how that all happened.
That would be a crying shame if any one of those cookies had to go to waste, because they are that good. I mean, obviously you've had the cookie offs and they usually win every single time. So
yeah,
that's awesome. Let's get back and touching on the networking element of things. You said that Logan Roman, for any of the stuff that's going on, you're getting tagged in their posts more than they're getting tagged in their own posts. So obviously that's been a benefit to you in terms of, you know, getting more exposure and getting more cookies out of it. That's been a big exposure benefit to them. How do you see other people being able to use their skill set and what they do incredibly well to get people like yourself saying, hey, this is really good, this is really awesome? Can they actually do that, or is that something that you think that a lot of companies have zero idea how to do?
Yeah, man. The tagging of the cookies is more funny than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
The number one thing that I did was I helped create Xamarin.com.
Yeah.
Whenever I get introduced to, let's say, high individuals or high well-known individuals, they may not know who the hell I am, but they almost always inevitably know of Xamarin.com, especially in the entrepreneur space. Everyone's so health conscious, blah, blah, blah. They all know about Xamarin.com. So when I meet somebody, and this happens maybe once a week now, I don't even have to try to, in a way, sell them who I am. I don't need to be like, hey, look at my social proof, look at my Facebook, look at this, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, shit, you created Xamarin.com. I love that website. Done. So by far, the number one thing is have something so badass that it's your calling card.
Yeah.
That you don't even have to lift a finger and you just say, oh, this is my company. And everyone goes, damn, that's an amazing company.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, to be honest, what I did in a way when I got into health and fitness was you have to leverage your existing expertise. And no matter how smart you may be or I may be, I've got blind spots that someone else out there doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for example, one of the things that I knew that most people didn't in fitness was local search optimization.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of these people who I met who had local, who had facilities or gyms, they were not properly, I would say, structuring it on their website. So I sent them unsolicited feedback saying, hey, listen, and obviously when I contact them, I'm very particular about contacting someone in a way so that they know that you've read their stuff.
Yeah.
Right? So for example, if I contacted you, I would not mention glenohumeral joint. But if I contacted Cressy, the first thing I would say was glenohumeral joint, and then I would say it again and maybe a third time. So he would definitely know that I've been reading his stuff, right?
Yeah.
But I would make sure to mention that, you know, I mean, I've always had joint problems. So I'd be like, oh, you know, I stumbled in your site because of joint problems. Or, hey, you know, I used to be heavy and I'm trying to get into weights, blah, blah, blah. With that said, you know, I come from a world of local search engine optimization. And this is like early in this decade, right? It's like 5-6 years ago. And I'd be like, you can just do these two simple tweaks to get your site ranking better in search engines. Right, it's a little bit tougher now, but just that kind of expertise that I could drop on somebody was huge.
Mm-hmm.
And so when people contact me now, I've noticed this where I get one, people just saying hi, two, people trying to obviously kind of, I hate this phrase, but trying to like suck up to me. And three, there's people like, oh, hey, you know, I saw you didn't do this or you forgot to do this. And if you just do this, 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 I can do it for you, or that'll be fixed, or I can even do it for you if you give me access. It's that kind of stuff that separates somebody, right? It's that kind of stuff where you go, listen, I don't want to sound like a jerk. There's tens and thousands of millions of entrepreneurs. But if you're reaching out to somebody and you show your expertise and you almost share that expertise with them, they're going to appreciate it. So I think that'd be the key, man. Like, it's different for me because I've been around for a long time. I mean, I was an entrepreneur for 18 years. I've been one for now, for 18 years. And nobody really knew who I was until, well, maybe in fitness, you could say 5-6 years ago, general in entrepreneurship until 2 years ago. So I had this huge body of work to be like, just look at that, right? Look at me, been in this magazine or whatnot. But in general, if I was starting from scratch and nobody knew who the hell I was, I would offer my knowledge. And no matter who you're talking to, they have blind spots. With that said, a lot of people ridiculously aim for, let's say, Tim Ferriss or Ramit or whatnot. at that level, they are so inundated. They are so busy with so many people trying to steal their attention. It's a waste of time.
Yeah.
You need to be honest with yourself, and you need to be in a brutal way, be like, who is an A-lister, B, C, D, E-list, or whatever. Like, I always joke that I'm a D-minus list E-celebrity because I respond to all tweets. If you send me an email, I will definitely respond to it. So it's that kind of stuff, right? You need to find people who are actually responsive, who have the brain capacity to respond to you, actually time capacity to respond to you, but also well-established enough that you could say, hey, I'm starting to build my network. And my last thing always is, like, I am not strategic at all about my network, if you wish. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm well connected to the chef industry here in Toronto, the food industry, and bizarre fields that have nothing to do with me on a professional level. Last person I connected with, she has a podcast on chocolates. I just love chocolates. We got along. Done.
Yeah.
There's a lot of value in just getting to know cool people that are doing cool things, because they will connect in ways you cannot even imagine. So as an example, we'll go through this entire chain, and it involves you.
So, all right.
I don't remember how, but I somehow came across you years ago. And we had chatted a little bit times online or via email, and I met you at John Goodman's PTDC conference.
Yeah.
And I remember when I met you and I said, hi, I'm Saul, you're like, oh, you're that guy. I remember this very clearly. You had no idea what it looked like. You had no idea. And to be honest, Saul is a very, like, Jewish Caucasian name. You would not expect a brown dude.
Well, but to be fair, I think at that point in time, your picture on your Facebook was like an avatar of like a monkey with symbols or something like that, wasn't it?
Facebook at the time. I was not I actually got on Facebook accidentally because of JC Dean, like 6 months after. So yeah, you had no idea what it looked like. And that's fine. But I remember this clearly in my brain. You're like, oh, that's you. We got along. Eventually, we wrote a few guest posts for you, and one of them was on creatine. Mm-hmm. That creatine one went pretty popular on Reddit because we were obviously, I was very active on Reddit. It became very popular on Reddit, and Men's Health shared it. And through Men's Health, Adam Bornstein then shared it. And then I said hi to Adam Bornstein. And him and I got along really, really well. And fast forward like three and a half years, he did an event literally 1 year ago. He's doing the second one right now.
Yeah.
He did an event, and I was one of the mentors there. I spoke at the event. And speaking at the event, I met a man named Jason Pfeiffer, who is the editor-in-chief at Entrepreneur Magazine. And I was just in New York a few weeks ago. I hung out with him. I've been in Entrepreneur Magazine a few times. I pitched a bunch of articles that have nothing to do with me that have gone live in that magazine. Mm-hmm. And you can say that my ability to get articles into Entrepreneur Magazine, which is completely something, again, more related to work shenanigans than anything else. If you look at last month's issue, there was an article on Wikipedia, purchasing Wikipedia stuff. And that was actually one of my pitches that they ran with. But you go all the way back. If I hadn't randomly emailed you that random time and then met you, blah, 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 all that would not have happened, right? So it's that kind of stuff where people become too almost strategic with it, where I was just like, shit, the dude talks about joints. My joints suck. Let's say hello. And voila, you know, five, whatever years it's been, look where we are now. So it's that kind of stuff. People, I think, sometimes take it way too seriously, where, again, be cool people, and everything will almost take care of itself right there.
Yeah, I think you give me way too much credit on that. I mean, I think that you could have just sent me a blog post and I would have ran with it versus anything else. But
I think that face-to-face made a difference. I'm sticking. You know what? I'm striking this from the record. I don't care what you just said. But as far as I'm concerned, it was because of the face-to-face that you said, okay, this human looks like to be an acceptable person.
Yeah.
I shall allow their guest post to go live. Yeah. And that worked out very well.
That, and I did a magic trick and you're like, okay, I got to do that now.
I appreciate showmanship when in the context of the bigger picture. So I can't help myself. Yeah. But that's another thing, right? Like John Romanello talks a lot about this, and I do this myself. Just show appreciation, show thanks.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's so easy to talk to somebody and be like, hey man, especially in fitness, man, hey man, your bicep vein looks great. Like, that's it. Like, if someone said that to me, I'll be like, you have made my day. I hung up with Mark Fisher a month ago at IDEA in Vegas.
Yeah.
And he was leading out for Burning Man. And he had the, you know, when the bicep splits in two near the forearm,
yeah.
I was like, bro, you got the double bicep vein going. It's great. And you could just see how giant his smile got because of the most innocuous compliment I could possibly give him.
Yeah.
But I understood the work in a way that went behind it. Right. I understood that pulling out a magic trick when you're giving a talk is not the easiest thing. So it's almost that too. Right. It's almost like, sorry, I totally went on a tangent there.
No, but that's good.
And like I said, Romanello talks about this, like, give compliments. People are so randomly stingy with compliments.
Yes.
It makes no sense. Someone does a good, even like, let's say you deliver 500 and someone does 405 and they're heavier than you, blah, blah, blah. Be like, yo, you got four plates. Congratulations. It will make people's day. So I'm very big on like giving ups to the smallest little things that someone does that may, they may think people, other people think are small, but I can appreciate the work that went into it. Even like a good photo, right? Like you see a nice photograph that someone took. All it takes is 2 seconds to be like, yo, that's a really good photo. Absolutely. I almost have a rule that on Facebook, I never just like a comment or like I don't like a status. I will always comment on a status because a like is so purposeless, so uninvolved. Like, meh, like, move on, right?
Yeah.
To me, showing a comment gives 100x more value.
Yeah.
It's showing that you actually care. At the minimum, maybe I'll do like a heart or something, but I feel like it just portrays my love or appreciation of what someone has done.
Yeah, I mean, unless it's your own status when you're liking, but
I mean, I look at, read my own status and I'm like, that is a brilliant status. Why doesn't anyone like it? I gotta like it myself.
Yeah, so I mean, if you don't like your own status, why would you put it up there?
That is literally my point of view. I mean, unless it's something really sad, then I might not like it. But in general, I'm very pro liking your own stuff. Otherwise, why bother?
Exactly. I mean, that's half the battle. This has been great being able to catch up with you, talk cookies, talk networking, that kind of stuff. For listeners out there, if you get a chance, go to sjo.com, sign up for his newsletter. He got some great, great, great free information on how to actually be better as a human being. Are you hitting up any of the slow cooking seminars this time?
Slow cooking seminars? Wait, what?
Weren't you part of like a slow cooking revolution for a little while?
No, I'm just a big proponent of slow cooking, but I'm like a big proponent of all cooking. I have a dehydrator, I have a sous vide, a slow cooker,
okay.
I have active fry, everything imaginable, I have it.
Or slow food, I should say, not slow cooking, slow food.
Yeah, sure. Why not? Like, to me, honestly, I love cooking. There's maybe like half a dozen like food science books behind me right there, not like recipe books, but you know, what is the effects of salt on meats and why do you need to, you know, let meat rest and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So to me, really, it's just... it depends, but for tender meat, slow cooking is the way to go, man. I'm gonna give the cookie. This is gonna be my last thing.
Yeah.
If you want to make a really delicious but easy chunk of meat in your slow cooker, all you need to do is salt and pepper overnight, always overnight, especially if it's meat that's in the fridge. A hunk of chuck roast, so like 2.5-3.5 pounds, just a chunk of red meat. And then from your local supermarket, buy pepperoncinis. So pepperoncinis are these little peppers found in Italy. And what you do is in the slow cooker, just throw your chunk of meat in there. And I'm giving explicit details because I know people are going to be like, what's the exact way to do it? Just put the piece of meat in the middle. You don't even have to put anything underneath it. Drain the liquid of the pepperoncini jar into the slow cooker. Pull the stems out of the pepperoncini and throw it in there. And all you need to do is slow cook it on low for anywhere from, you know, you can do high too, anywhere from 6 to 10 hours, and then shred the meat and then put it back into, like, take the hunk of meat out, shred it, put it back into the slow cooker, let it stay there for like 10, 15 minutes and then pull it out and you'll have the most delicious, simplest, moistest meat you can imagine. And you just throw it in a bun, put in a little bit of aioli, put the meat in there and whoo, whoo. Game changer. It's the easiest meal in the world. I've fed it to maybe 40 people and every single one has gone like, damn, this is delicious. And I'm like, you're welcome.
Yeah, the only reason I bring that up is I remember when we first started going back and forth, I was training a client who was on like the World Slow Food committee. And you had something where you put up where it was like slow food. And I messaged you and I was like, hey, what are you doing with this slow food thing? I've never heard of this, except I have this one client who's like world slow food cooking. And you're like, oh, this is awesome. Boom, boom, boom. And you just started going back and forth. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, I get pretty excited over food and whatnot. But yeah, makes sense right there.
Food is the way to go. Saul Orwell, SJO.com, examine.com, probably 15 other different websites if you want to track them down.
Sure.
Pleasure chatting with you, my man. I'm looking forward to catching up with you in person and going on a cookie off.
Absolutely. My pleasure. And I will see you in like a month. Absolutely. Easy.
Absolutely, man.
Sounds like a plan.